This weekend's UFC 262 is sure to be a can't-miss event. Every punch, kick, and knockout means so much more with the DraftKings lineup on the line. DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of UFC, is giving you a shot at huge cash prizes. For this weekend's fight, DraftKings is offering all customers a shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. If you haven't tried it yet, fantasy MMA is easy to play. Just pick six fighters, stay under the salary cap, and pile up points for advances, takedowns, and more. There's no better way to put your MMA knowledge to the test than to compete for a shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. Plus, don't forget about basketball and hockey, where DraftKings has even more money up for grabs throughout the week. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, so you can deposit and withdraw your funds at your convenience. Download the DraftKings app now and use promo code TBPN for your shot at millions of dollars in total prizes throughout the week. That's promo code TBPN to get a shot at millions of dollars in total prizes only at DraftKings. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Rose and Spurscast, episode 611. My name is Paul Garcia, and I'm your host here on the Spurscast. Today, I'll be joined by Project Spurs writer Benjamin Bornstein. In this episode, Ben and I will discuss the Spurs in their last three games and how much of a priority adding shooting should be this offseason. Let's go ahead and get started with this episode. Ben, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you, sir?
I'm doing very well. You know, I'm glad, a few weeks ago, you and I tried to, record and then, there was some circumstances just we could have figured out. So we got it. I'm glad you're here now for this episode.
Yes.
So,
and also
go ahead
to answer your question real quick. There should be heavy emphasis on shooting this off season.
Yes, for sure. We're going to get into that in just a little bit here, especially some stats that I've been wanting to talk about here on the Spurscast for Spurscast listeners. So let's first begin, Ben, with the latest news on the team. It's been three games only since I last recorded with Josh Bredet this a week ago. They've gone 2-1 in these last three games. So the Spurs have actually been playing well as of late in these last three games. So let's just do a quick little recap here of the last three games. So the first game begins on last Friday. The Spurs defeated the Sacramento Kings in Sacramento by 9. I'm calling this a taking care of business kind of win for the Spurs. You know, the Spurs were the favorite here because the Kings were without De'Aaron Fox and Harrison Barnes and also Halliburton, and the Spurs did lead by 11. It was a pretty close game throughout, but they ended up winning by 9 points, and that one pretty much is going to kick that win right there is probably going to kick Sacramento out of the play-in games scenario, which I'll get into a little bit pretty much here. Then on Saturday was a second out of back-to-back. The Spurs lost against Portland in Portland. This is what I'm calling a comfortable win for Portland, where they led by as many as 26 points. They won by 22 on this night. The Spurs started off really well in the first quarter, but then they just kind of fell apart, and Portland kind of kept a very a big cushion against them, and then they kind of pulled away there in the fourth quarter. And then the most recent win was that game Monday against the Bucks for the Spurs. I would call this a very impressive win just because of the circumstances. For one, we know San Antonio struggles at home. They ended up winning this game at home. The Bucks were favored by 7. They pretty much had all their players there. And the Spurs actually were the ones who just were on fire throughout the night in the first half. They set a franchise record. I want to say it was like 87 points, something like that. And then they ended up winning by scoring 146 points on the Bucks. The Spurs led by as many as 27. And, they kept a really good margin of points compared to the Bucks, and that's a good thing because we had just seen the Spurs team a few weeks ago lose that big lead, that 32-point lead against the Boston Celtics. So there was a little bit of hesitancy in terms of, are the Spurs going to hold this? Are they going to hold this? But then, sure enough, yeah, by like midway to the fourth quarter, Coach Budenholzer from the Bucks pulled all the starters for Milwaukee, and the Spurs ended up holding on to that win. So not a bad three games. What are some of your thoughts on how they've been playing lately?
Just like you said on Friday against Sacramento, that was very much a taking care of business game. That was a game they should win every time. Even I would say even with a couple of those guys there, they should probably win that game because Sacramento is going to be out of the playoffs. That is why they are called Sad Sack Town. That's right. I said it. Maybe I just made that up. Who knows? But I'm going to say they've been called that forever. The game against Portland, that is a brutal loss, but Portland is a very good team, and I don't think that their record is indicative of how good they are. And I think a lot of that is because they've had injuries pretty much all year that they've been working through. I know CJ McCollum had injuries at the beginning of the year. I think Jokic had some injuries. So, you know, they've been working through that. And I think they're going to be a dangerous team in the playoffs if, you know, if they get like a 6-7 seed, depending on how that plays out with Los Angeles, really. So I would say, you know, 22 point loss to a really good team like that. Yeah, that's a spanking you might expect. But to come back around and 2 days later play at home against the Bucks and beat them the way the Spurs did was a phenomenal response. That's really the stuff of dreams if you're a coach. That's stuff you can build off of late in the season, give your guys some momentum, and hopefully go in strong in what's looking like a play-in game. And I will say this, you should not expect the Spurs to shoot like that again the rest of the season. That is absolutely an anomaly for this team.
Yeah, it was like, you know, not only did they have their best shooting night from three of the season, they had like the best shooting night from everywhere. In the paint, they were shooting really well from mid-range. I mean, just every single jump shot or even shot near the rim just went in for this team. It looked like in that game against the Bucks, and you're right there. I don't think they should, fans should expect that to happen. But, you know, it is crazy that, you know, this Spurs team, it's been random. It doesn't have very often. It's probably maybe a handful of times. They can't get hot from three, even though a lot of these players are known to be three-point shooters. We saw Patty Mills, who had just been struggling for almost 2 months now, and he just all of a sudden makes six threes in this one game. And even though we know Patty's a good shooter, it's just saying, like, you know, players like Keldon Johnson hitting threes and DeJounte Murray, just a bunch of different players are making threes in that game.
And all if right. I'm correct, I believe it's only the second time in NBA history, with the first coming in the 80s. I want to say 1983. It was Portland. They had six players who scored 19 or more points.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that was another, yeah, that's another point here. Just the amount of scoring they had, especially off the bench too. They were like, from the majority of the game, they were like plus 32 on Milwaukee and bench points. Rudy Gay and Patty Mills were really, and Devin Vassell too had a big part in that. All right,
And in classic Spurs fashion, nobody scored 25 or more.
Oh, there you go. Perfect. Just perfect Spurs fashion right there. All right, let's go ahead and discuss the state of the team, where they stand as of you and I recording this on a Tuesday evening. So they do have four games left to Spurs. They are 33-35, 10th out West. It most likely looks like that's where they're going to finish here, 10th in terms of making it to that play-in game, and I'll discuss that in a bit. They're 7th. Because of that crazy game against the Bucks, they actually moved up from 20th since I last recorded a week ago on offense to actually 17th, so they've actually improved offensively with hanging 146 points on Milwaukee. Then defensive, they kind of stay where they are, 12th. Right now, they'd be in position in the lottery to land the 13th pick. They do have the second hardest schedule now left in the NBA. Again, it's just the final week here, four games. And the way their scenario stands is basically, if the Spurs win one more game, they're in. They clinch the play-in game spot. If the Kings or Pelicans, who are behind them, lose even just one game, they're out, and the Spurs clinch that spot. So basically, it looks like 10th is there for them. And the reason why I say 10th is most likely spot is because it's very difficult for San Antonio to finish ahead of Memphis or Golden State. Basically, the Spurs would have the Spurs would have to go 3-1 in order to finish ahead of Memphis, and that's having help by having Memphis lose all their games. I don't think that's going to happen. And then same thing, they need Golden State to lose all the remaining games, and then they would still have to go undefeated, basically, the Spurs, to finish ahead of the Warriors. So right now, those two mountains look very tough to climb, but this team does look like they're in solid position to get that clinch, that 10th play-in spot. So what are some of your thoughts on the state of the team?
You can absolutely count on the Kings or Pelicans to lose a game, so I am not worried about that at all. Mm-hmm. I also happen to think that despite these four games being incredibly hard for the Spurs, they will win at least one of them and assure themselves of a spot here. I would say that, yes, it's incredibly unlikely and very improbable that they finish 9 or even 8, like you said, ahead of Memphis or Golden State. I think Golden State is kind of finding its way around games now, and they've kind of said, you know what, we're going to ride Curry as much as we need to, and it's been working. So yeah, he's going to end up with the scoring title despite a phenomenal season from Bradley Beal. So, I mean, when you have the scoring champ on your team and he's a guy who also is an amazing passer, sets up his teammates incredibly well, you're going to be all right, especially in a playoff scenario. If they get – the eighth seed over Memphis, they only have to win one game, and then they go out and they play the one seed. And, you know, maybe they take one, maybe they take a game in that series, but, you know, they still don't have enough to compete with a Utah or a Phoenix. So I wouldn't be too worried about them. But, I mean, the Spurs getting a play-in game is pretty much par for the course, I think, this year. I believe that was really everyone's expectations, mm-hmm. especially once it became clear that LaMarcus Aldridge was not going to be the LaMarcus Aldridge of his youth. And even more so obvious after the Spurs released him. So they have to figure out what they're doing with the young guys. And I think this would be – these last four games are good opportunities to get some guys minutes that wouldn't normally get it. Because if you're the Spurs, you have to win – in order to move on to the real playoffs, as they say, you have to win two straight games yep. against possibly the Lakers, possibly Portland – possibly Memphis. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, those are tough games to win two in a row. And when the other team knows it only has to win one of those games, if it wins the first game, they're done with you. Your season's over. But, you know, you might be able to scare a team if you take the first game. If you're San Antonio, you build some confidence with the young guys and they go out and they play with great energy. But with this team, I think it's better for them, frankly, if, you know, you get to your playing game, you play your regular rotations, or you get a little daring with your rotations and say, let's roll out some of these younger guys and see how they play in a fairly high stakes situation. See what you've got there. And if you lose the game, you lose the game, not a big deal. You weren't expected to get this far. I think you and I discussed this a while ago, actually. The Spurs were already over the Vegas odds mm-hmm. on them for games one. I think Vegas was 31 or 31 and a half, and they've got 33 wins. So, you know, they're essentially playing with house money at this point.
Yeah.
And, you know, you go into the offseason. I know we're going to talk about this a little later, but you go into the offseason with a stupid amount of money in the mm-hmm. on your salary cap or for salary cap space. So you'll have opportunities to bring in players to help you.
Yeah, and I think just finishing 10th in terms of the lottery, that's going to help them too. Because, I mean, unless the Spurs can get to 8th, which that looks almost impossible to do right now, you know, like we talked about the mountain they'd have to climb there. You know, like you mentioned, 8th would get them an easier chance to get into the first round because they have two chances to win a game. Whereas 10th, I mean, they would end up with this 13th kind of lottery pick. If they were to get to 9th, well, then that's not so good because then they slip down to 14th, you know, in terms of lottery odds. So again, I think that finishing 10th here is probably the best scenario for this team, especially, you know, of course, if they don't win those playing games, well, then they would have to, they'd at least stay right there with that 13th pick most likely. So again, we'll kind of see what happens. And by the time I record next time, I'll probably be previewing the playing game, a game that should be coming up for the Spurs team and wrapping up the final few games of the season. All right, Ben. So again, it's been, you know, there hasn't been much, it's only been three games, you know, and it's really tough to actually make a general assessment with just three games. I mean, seven games left since I last recorded of the regular season at the time. And so, you know, I don't want to go too stat heavy in terms of certain areas that the Spurs did well against Milwaukee or against Sacramento, where they struggled against Portland. Cause again, it's just a really small sample size. But what I do want to look at is one stat that I haven't really talked about here on the Spurs cast. And, you know, that's the 3-point shooting for this team. And the reason why that comes up now is because of what we just saw last night against Milwaukee. Like you mentioned, you know, that was, you don't expect, you know, the Spurs to shoot, I think it was like 59% from three in every game, but this team can get hot on at times from three. And we've seen what happens when they shoot well from three, but then also they take away threes from the opponent. And there's a stat here that I've been tracking this season, and it's called, I mean, when the Spurs win or tie the 3-point line. So this has happened in 25 games this season. And the Spurs, you see the results. I mean, the Spurs are 20-5 when they win or tie the 3-point line against their opponent this season. So that accounts for basically 61% of their wins have come just from either tying the opponent in 3-point shooting or winning the 3-point line for San Antonio, just like that case against Milwaukee yesterday. Now, the other part of that is that the Spurs don't usually win or tie the 3-point line, and that's the reason why this team struggles. They are 13-30 when they lose the 3-point line. So when the other team wins the 3-point line, the Spurs are 13-30. So basically that accounts for about 86% of their losses. So we see that's a huge chunk of why this team really struggles.
And
so,
you know,
no, definitely not great. So yeah, so that's kind of what I want to talk about. I know it's really early, you know, we're not quite in the off season yet, but you know, it's getting closer here, the off season, pretty soon. And so, you know, I just want to kind of have a minor discussion here about this, the 3-point shooting gap here, and what to, you know, this is definitely going to probably be a priority for this team going forward, you know, especially next year. So what I wanted to first discuss is let's talk about the roster returning in terms of players back and how they shoot threes. So I'm calling them the volume shooters returning to this team are Derek White and Lonnie Walker IV. We know that those are players who put up a lot of threes and can't shoot very accurate, especially the case for Lonnie right now. And then Derek was struggling because he had just come back from injury, but then right before he got hurt again, he was actually shooting well from three in the month of April. I would code Devin Vassell as their reliable shooter, where he's pretty much a reliable shooter. He's gonna take three ball if it's there for him. You know, he doesn't have to feel like he's like wide open to take it. And you know, he's starting to get his three ball back. I know he struggled for a few weeks here from three. Then the other players that I'm coding as you know, they shoot only when they have to, unless they're like left wide open and it's late in the shot clock possession. These players are DeJounte Murray, Keldon Johnson, Lucas Samanich, and Trey Jones. And again, on Jones and Samanich, it's a little bit just because the data is very small, the sample size, because they only played, they don't play that much with this team right now. And then the two non-shooters returning to this team we expect are you know, Jakob Poeltl and Drew Eubanks. And again, the reason why I'm talking about these specific players is because these are the players under contract and they're not going to be free agents this offseason. So one thing that really really stuck out to me the other day was that DeJounte Murray said, I think it was after the Portland game, he said, you know, one thing he wants to do when this season's over is he wants to lock himself in a gym and just work on his three ball. He really wants to add that to his game, become a more reliable shooter from distance, like how he's already done from the mid-range. And then the three players that are kind of up in the air, because we don't know if they're returning to the team, are DeMar DeRozan, Patty Mills, and Rudy Gay. And Patty's a big one, and Rudy Gay as well, because those are two players that they definitely rely on for their three-point shooting as well. And if those guys are gone, well, then Spurs lose a lot of three-point shooting there. So kind of just in terms of the players returning, what are some of your thoughts about these stats, but then also, you know, them returning these players?
So I think what these stats underline is that, you know, the NBA is very much a three-point shooting league. Mm-hmm. And it's been that way for probably a decade now. So while I appreciate the Spurs trying to keep it old school, play the beautiful game kind of stuff, at some point you have to shoot more threes. And especially when, I think it's been the last two or three seasons, they've been actually pretty accurate from three, but they have been a bottom three, bottom five team in volume, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. If you have guys that you trust to shoot it and they're shooting it well, let it fly. You know, and even if you're missing, if you're shooting threes, you're more likely to get long rebounds. Let Poeltl and let Eubanks go chase down long rebounds. You know, those are guys who are happy to do that kind of dirty work, especially because they know they're not shooting the ball. They have to get the team extra possessions, or they have to get putbacks. They have to do something on offense, and that's what they will do. So it also says, I think, that in a lot of these games, the Spurs have not played – they have not played well on the perimeter defensively. I think there have been times when they chase a guy off the line, he penetrates, but because everybody is now scrambling, another three-point shooter gets open. Yep. And it's, you know, probably a good portion of the time it's a corner three. And if you're getting a direct pass into the corner on a spot up three from that spot, it is a high percentage shot. That is probably the best three in the game. Especially if it's spot up, if you're not taking your sidestep dribble or a step back or whatever, and you're just straight up catching it and shooting it, high percentage shot. And I think the teams are getting a lot of that. So I think while the Spurs absolutely need to look at some shooters this offseason, both in the draft and in free agency, they need to look at guys who are going to be able to defend three or be able to properly play help defense, be able to switch onto multiple guys so that when you do get that scramble, you can get out to your shooter. You're not too slow out there and you can stay on him and guard him for the rest of that possession if you need to.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's the part about when we talk about adding shooting is that you're going to probably, you know, if you can't find those 3-and-D kind of players, you're going to lose some defense there. And that's the part that, you know, do they want to do that? That's a big question. Because, I mean, that's the reason why you saw, you know, a guy like Bryn Forbes leaving Marco Bellinelli, is that this team got so much better defensively, but they also lost a lot of shooting. And now we see that accuracy-wise, they're having one of their worst shooting seasons. Also, volume-wise, they're still back there in the bottom five, like you mentioned earlier, Ben. So yeah, there's different ways the Spurs team can add some shooting this offseason. They, like you mentioned, mentioned, Ben, they do have $50 million in cap space. I'll do a deep dive into who the, you know, the free agent targets are that are really good 3-point shooters later on this offseason when it's actually official. Then there's also the draft, you know, and they're most likely going to get a lottery pick. So that's why I do want to ask you some questions here. And then there's also that balancing act, like you said. You know, they also still need some size in the front court. You know, maybe at the spot where Keldon starts, you know, some help on the boards. We've seen that this has been a huge issue for this team is the offensive boards for the opponent. And so I think they do want to maybe look at a big, and that's why we've seen them tied to some free agents like John Collins and Jared Allen and Lauri Markkanen. But then it's just kind of tough to find just a good 3-and-D player because, you know, you can see a bunch of shooters out in the free agent market, but then, you know, those, a lot of those players are going to make you lose something on defense is what it looks like right now. So in terms of the draft, Ben, you know, are there any volume shooters there in the lottery for this team in terms of, like, when I say like volume, like, yeah, like just volume shooters, players that put up a lot of threes, and that's kind of what they're known for. What do you think? What are some of your thoughts?
Absolutely. So a guy just recently wrote up, Cam Thomas out of LSU. So this kid is a walking bucket, and not just threes, but he takes and makes tough shots. And there were times for LSU when he was the offense. Mm-hmm. And he was out, and teams knew that. Teams were keying in on him on defense, and he still got his. So I think that's a kid you might consider. He's 6'4", and he's not really a point guard, so he's a bit undersized to play two, which is concerning. And he's not really known for his defense either, but a volume shooter he will be. Moses Moody from Arkansas, mm-hmm. He is very much a 3-and-D candidate, a much better defensive player than Cam Thomas. He's 6'6". He can hold his own. He's a lefty. He is a nice, nice shooter. So that's a guy to consider. I got a couple more. A guy who's actually really versatile, a good versatile player, Jeremiah Robinson Earl from Villanova. Mm-hmm. I'd have to go back and look at his numbers for the year, but his 3-point numbers are not great. When I wrote him up in March, he was shooting about 28%, but his mechanics don't look bad. And he's a solid free throw shooter. He shoots over 70%. I think he could get out there and be a shooter at some point, but he wouldn't be a volume guy, but he is a very good defensive player and he would give you defensive versatility. A guy I like in the second round, he will absolutely fall to the second round. Isaiah Livers out of Michigan. Mm-hmm. And it's actually funny because he missed the last few games of the season, including the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. And I think in that loss that Michigan suffered in the Final Four, it really showed how important he was to that defense. He's a 6'7" guard forward. Mm-hmm. Who is incredibly switchable. He spaces the floor and he hits threes for his team. I really like him in the second round if he's still available when the Spurs are picking. And then a guy, he won SEC Player of the Year, Herb Jones out of Alabama, 6'8", super long. He's going to be a good defender, very switchable. Again, not really. I know I've given you like one true volume shooter here. Yeah. Herb Jones, though, a solid shooter, but again, not a volume shooter. If you want a guy who's a true, who could be a really good 3-point volume shooter, Corey Kispert out of Gonzaga. Okay. Dude was an absolute deadeye this season. He was flirting with a 50-40-90 season. Okay. So he can light it up. His defense is probably not going to be as good as some of those other guys.
Yeah.
But dude can absolutely hit it.
So I guess here's another question for you. You know, because we've also talked about, as you've written about, you know, the Spurs do need another big man too. That's something else. You know, how much should they weigh? You know, whether to take the big man? Like, just in terms of your opinion, like is there a better big man prospect out there first rather than a shooter? What do you think in terms of, like, let's say their 13th or 14th pick, where they're going to probably land?
At 13 and 14, there is not going to be a better big man.
Okay.
Because your one great big man that you like is definitely going to be off the board, and Evan Mobley. He is going to be a top 3 pick, if not the second pick.
Okay.
So he just won't be available. And there are some guys I like in the second round as bigs, but there's not really a first round graded guy from the college ranks who I would take with that first pick. I know a lot of A lot of mock drafts have the Spurs eyeing Alperen Sengun, mm-hmm. I hope I said that right, and Usman Garuba. Mm-hmm. Garuba is not a shooter. He is a pure defensive guy, but he is very switchable. He's strong, and he's been excellent in his league this season. And Sengun is not really known as a three-point shooter quite yet. He's pretty long. He's lanky, but he's a guy who doesn't really play D, or mm-hmm. he can't. And he's shown that he can step out and shoot it a little bit, but you don't know if that guy can really be a volume shooter. And I have to look at more tape of both of those guys, but you know, my specialty is college. So that's what I can give you.
Another question I have is, I don't know if it's expected or surprised where you at Devin Vassell's performance in terms of the NBA three, how well he's adapted to it, how he's basically, like I said, he's one of the reliable shooters coming back to this team already, and he's just finishing his rookie year here. So was that a surprise to you? Is that kind of what you expected out of him? And we're talking about the offensive end. I know defensively he's obviously came in as a good defender, and he's shown that here in the NBA. What about his offense? Did that kind of surprise you a little bit? What are your thoughts on that, on Devin's year?
I don't know if it surprised me. I think actually what really surprised me was how often he got to play. I figured mm-hmm. they were going to stash him in Austin for the entire year and say, work your way up. Yeah. But he actually got some good time this year, and I think he made the most of it. He was an efficient shooter at Florida State, and at Florida State, it's always hard to tell just how good a guy is because Leonard Hamilton legitimately goes 10 or 11 guys deep. There are dudes playing 20 minutes a game. And, you know, I mean, Patrick Williams was the number four pick, and that was a dude who was playing like 20, 25 minutes for that team. So it's always hard to tell on that specific team and coach. But I thought Devin Vassell would be a good player. I figured he would hit some shots. I don't want to say it was a total surprise, but I also don't want to sit here and say, oh, yeah, I completely predicted this. Devin Vassell is a monster. Yeah, I told everybody. You know, I'm not going to be that guy, but I guess it's fair to say he surprised me a little bit, and I think most of that is because he got so many minutes.
Yeah, for sure. And a big part of that was just the Derek White injury. I mean, early on, I mean, that's the reason why Pop, you know, brought him up as a rookie compared to, like how you said, how we've seen like Trey Jones and Lucas Samanich have to go more the Austin route, even though it was more that G League bubble for those two players. So yeah, but like I said, I mean, Devin's been really impressive. The fact that like coming in, if Patty Mills doesn't get re-signed to Rudy Gay, well, then all of a sudden Devin's like the Spurs' third best shooter on this team, like from three, like he's a player that they're going to rely on a little bit more. So again, I just wanted to kind of just get a few of your thoughts. And obviously, you know, as the draft approaches later on in the next few months, you and I will talk more. We'll have more, you know, draft prospects, and also I'll be discussing more free agent candidates. But again, I think the three ball is definitely something the Spurs, you know, need to address, and I think that's going to be one of their priorities. Aside from just also working, looking at getting different big men to scout, just because, like I said, this is a huge, issue for this team is the fact that, you know, now that some of these core group is coming back with this team, and even if the veterans leave, like DeRozan and Patty Mills and Rudy Gay, well, then a lot of these younger players are still going to be here, and this is something that we see is going to be an issue for this team, is that they can be very successful when they make or tie the three-point ball, but if they're getting outscored from three, well, then this is a team that really struggles for them. So, this team struggles with that type of shot.
Yeah.
So before we close out this episode, make sure Spurscast listeners, you're visiting projectspurs.com. Like Ben mentioned, you know, his latest prospect watch is over Cam Thomas, and Ben will continue to provide prospect watches as the draft nears, especially as we get more, you know, hone in on who exactly the Spurs are going to have. He'll be able to target a little bit more the players in those draft ranges. Josh Paredes is kicking off his Tim Duncan week over on Project Spurs. His latest piece is the top five Tim Duncan versus Kevin Garnett moments ever. So that's by Josh as Tim Duncan gets ready to go into the Hall of Fame this coming weekend. And then also Steven Anderson continues to keep you update on the team with his recaps and analysis after each Spurs game. So thanks again to Ben for joining me here on the Spurs cast and also to Michael DeLeon for mixing and producing this episode. From all of us at Project Spurs, stay safe and have a great day.